Football Focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
Hey, as a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFL.
Do you not understand that they are that way because you're Joe Flacco?
You just like to discredit things that people deserve credit for.
That you can't possibly be expected to defend that.
Talk about the game, Sam.
So,
who cares about what people think about us?
Yeah, I like football. I like football season and all the things that go with it.
Welcome into the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Palazzolo back here with Sam Monson. We've got a great show planned because we're getting some interaction from our listeners, Sam.
Okay.
One question per fan base. We're going to answer one, some might call them burning question.
Some might.
Some. From each fan base. And we've already collected those. Thank you for sending those in at NFLpodcast@pff.com or on Twitter. Before we get started, don't forget PFF.com has everything you need for fantasy, betting, or simply all of the grades and stats that we are going to reference here on this show, all part of your Edge or Elite package. Of course, I suggest Elite, but you know, Edge will get you through the season with our great fantasy tools. Elite has all the good stuff, including all the grades and stats. So please get to PFF.com and go check that out right now.
Nice.
Thank you.
Let's get to the questions.
We're also grading every single player on every play during the preseason. So there's a game tonight, and there's games tomorrow, and there's games Saturday.
Yeah.
And you'll just have updated grades and snap counts.
Constant games.
And it's going to be awesome.
And this week is the week where, you know, actual players might play, not just the backups of the backups of the backups.
Yeah.
Like, starters are going to be here.
I mean, I like seeing the backups too. The super rookies, even.
Super rookies.
Yeah. The guys that were rookies last year that didn't get to play in the preseason.
Yeah, preseason.
That's what we're calling them. Let's hit on the news really quickly, though. Bears left tackle Tevin Jenkins out for a period of time. Rookie second-round pick. Maybe for the season. We'll see. They hope to have him back. But we break this down on the PFF NFL Daily, what it means for the Bears and when Justin Fields should start.
Right. What it means for the starting quarterback. Andy Dalton, bless him. He's out there. He's like, it's my job. I'm not going quietly into the night.
He's not wrong.
Not with this red hair.
He's not saying like that. He's just said it's my time. What is it? Whose time is it right now? It's Dalton's time.
It's true. He didn't specify how long that period of time would be. It's my time right now. That time may only last 17 minutes,
like,
but it's mine.
What else is he going to say?
I don't know.
Like, Dalton should have been like, oh, I'm just keeping the seat warm for Justin Fields. I mean, come on, people. Let's just overreact to all, like, normal comments. The other news, Jamal Adams signing a massive contract for a safety. Do you want to touch on that quickly? Maybe we'll try this 1 minute thing because we're going to answer all of your questions in a timely manner. Can we get this? Can we practice this 1 minute?
Whoa.
Time's up.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, you have to do it after the minute. We have Alyssa and Ethan keeping us on point.
On the buzzer?
Yeah.
The buzzer being them?
Yeah. So, ready? Let's try 1 minute for Sam to react to Jamal Adams' contract. Go.
Well, the amount they were going to be paying was kind of locked in the second they traded two first-round picks for him without any extension in place. So it was all the leverage was with Jamal Adams' camp. The Seahawks essentially just had to wait and pay whatever it was going to cost. The lingering sadness I have, though, is that we didn't reach the stage where he was going to be franchise-tagged to see him argue what position he was going to get franchise-tagged at. Right. There were reports that he was going to argue he was a linebacker because the money is more for a linebacker than it is for a safety. I think he should go the whole hog and argue he's a defensive end.
Yeah, he's an edge rusher.
Right. I'm an edge rusher. That's where the big money is. I would have given that a shot. If Jimmy Graham can argue he's a wide receiver, Jamal Adams can argue he's an edge rusher.
Now I get a minute.
Go.
Jamal Adams, unique player. They tapped into his skill set last year. He had the third most pressures on the team last year, despite having only 100, just over 100 rushes. The other guys just above him had 450 rushes, 500 rushes. Now, it's cheating. He's got a few free runs as a safety, but there were times he lined up as a legitimate edge rusher. So, Lewis Riddick was saying, you know, calling out people on Twitter for saying, oh, it's a less valuable position. Technically, it is, but I will say Jamal Adams, there's a handful of safeties, Jamal Adams, Derwin James, who do so much for your defense. I can understand the value there. So, it might be a less valuable position in isolation, but there are certain players who I think trump that, and Adams has that ability. Even though his coverage grade was down last year, 14 missed tackles, He only had 13 the previous 2 years. I think Adams, his track record says, one of the best safeties in the league, so I don't hate it as a contract. I do hate that they put themselves in a position where they had to, you know, they didn't have any leverage, the Seahawks.
Yeah, every one of these contracts where there's been a giant trade happening and then the extension is coming down the line, it's a terrible negotiating position. Like, not when you're making that deal, you have to understand that not only are you trading that amount, but you are setting yourselves up for not just the top of the market deal, but a deal that is probably above top of the market.
All right, let's get into our burning questions. We're live on YouTube. Appreciate everybody for being there. So all of our questions, we've got them already collected. Feel free to fire some over. If you know, maybe we'll do two per team. We'll see what happens, but we want to keep it nice and tight. So we're going to try. I will read the question.
Okay.
You get a minute to answer, and I get a minute to answer.
All right.
And Ethan and Alyssa will try to make sure that we stay on point in the
It's going to trample forward. All over our, you know, back and forth banter shtick that we have.
Well, I think I can use my 1 minute, and maybe I can cede some time to you within my minute for some back and forth. Either way, we have 2 minutes. How about this? We have 2 minutes to answer each question.
Okay.
And if we want to banter, we can banter. If we want to monologue, we can monologue.
Right.
Just keep it tight. That's the answer. That's the goal.
Okay.
We're going to go division by division. So we're going to start.
I don't love the concept. I was out on this entire idea right up until the point that they said that they would make the buzzer sound from the booth.
That's what we want.
That's what got me on board. So whatever it takes to make that sound come through the speaker, I'm in.
All right. Ready to go?
Yeah.
You guys ready back there? All right, they're ready. All right, we're going to start. AFC East, the Buffalo Bills. This comes from Steven Robinson via email. He actually sent about 15 questions.
Oh.
And we appreciate Steven. What about the Bills' defense makes them better than the sum of their parts? He also asked about Stephon Diggs, what makes him so good. So we'll answer two of them.
No, I'm only answering one. You don't get two questions just because you sent 15.
Steven said he'd become an Edge subscriber if we answered these questions.
Two?
So I'm willing to go above and beyond for
but
Steven.
But you're only answering two.
Just go. Answer okay. Something.
The sum of their parts thing, it's coaching, right? The scheme is good. The scheme puts defenders in a position to succeed in a way that they wouldn't if they were in a different system, has to do more. It's not that they're bad players or that they don't fit the thing properly, but we've seen both in Buffalo and before in Carolina, safeties in particular, defensive backs generally have an easier job. Like, there are guys that get asked, you know, Jalen Ramsey, right? Jalen Ramsey put on an island, asked to do an incredible amount versus other cornerbacks or other defensive backs. His life's harder. The Bills are the other end of the scale. They ask a lot less of their defensive backs. And because of that, because the system is good, it means they can play better overall. And it means that the collective of that defense is greater than the sum of its parts.
I see your time's up.
I know. I was trying to get it to a minute so that they'd come in with the buzzer, and I don't hear anything.
I could do the buzzer too. I agree with a lot of that. They mix up their coverages. They play a lot of zone. They will play some cover one man, but they mix it up. I also think they're just good, solid players on their team, right? They have a good, solid pass rush with Jerry Hughes, and they actually got after the quarterback pretty well. The linebackers are decent, and the secondary is decent. Tre'Davious White would be the one star of that unit. But we've seen good play from Levi Wallace. We've seen excellent play from their safeties with Micah Hyde back there, Jordan Poyer through the years. So I think it's the sum of their parts, but it's because their parts are just good and solid combined with the coaching that you said. They're very good. And just to answer the Stephon Diggs question, what makes him so good? I think there's this aggressiveness, this attacking of the football that smaller type of receivers need. He's a great receiver, but I think that's what kind of puts him over the top is the attitude that Stephon brings to the table.
Okay.
But the bottom line is Stephon Diggs gets open. So there you go. It's the Bills question. Let's go to the New York Jets.
What's happened to our buzzer?
I don't know. How are you guys doing back there?
You guys aren't going over a minute.
We are. I'm looking
Sam's,
at the clock
Sam's
right now.
Keeping time
I
over
here.
I have a timer. I have a timer, and we went over 1 minute, and then we went over 2 minutes.
This is a good thing. We're being efficient, Sam. All right? The buzzer is only there if we need it. Okay?
Okay.
All right. For the New York Jets. If LaFleur and Wilson and company can significantly improve the offense over last year's disaster, do you think that has a not insignificant boost to our defense through improved field position and time resting on the sideline? So will the offense for the Jets make their defense better this year?
Yeah. I mean, if a good offense will help a defense. Those, I find it difficult when teams sort of blame a bad defense for, you know, reason that a quarterback is struggling. which happens a lot. Like fans in particular complain about that. And generally, it's not a massive thing. Like the fact that Peyton Manning never had a defense, sure, it impacted his ability to like win games, but it didn't impact really his performance. Like it didn't hold Peyton Manning back during the time he was on the field, but it definitely, they're not completely separate. One affects the other. And in particular, I think an offense can definitely help a defense. Like if it is more efficient, the defense is on the field less, they can be more effective when they are out on the field. And the Jets offense has been pretty abysmal the past couple of years. So if they get back to just being viable and capable, then yeah, it is. I mean, the phrase he used is the right one, a not insignificant boost. There we go.
There we go. Time's up. I think the defense will be better because Robert Saleh's there. And I think that he has a multi-year track record now of having success with the 49ers defense, even when they had injuries. You know, last year, the Niners had the sixth best defense EPA allowed. And that was without Nick Bosa. That was without, after trading DeForest Buckner, that was without Richard Sherman. So I think that's going to be the biggest factor. But to answer the initial question, like, yeah, in offense, it takes a little bit of pressure off the defense if they don't have to, you know, make as many plays. The thing with Peyton, though, when you have a good offense and you score a lot of points, it actually makes the other team pass a little bit more. And so defensively, you're more likely to give up more yards because passing's more efficient. So it kind of, there is a little push-pull. Plus, they played in a dome, Sam, all the time. Don't forget about that. Mm. It's tough to play defense in a dome. So yeah, the Jets will be better defensively in part because of coaching and in part because, yeah, the offense will be a little bit better. Yeah, I didn't need the whole minute.
No, smooth.
New England Patriots, the burning question. Okay, so I did not write down who that question was from. My apologies. Steven Robinson asked the Bills question, the Jets question. I did not write down who that was from. Thank you, PFF podcast fan. This one comes from Aiden McMullen via Twitter for the Patriots. Do you guys think that the offense, it looks like the Patriots are leaning towards with Mac Jones, will be very low ADOT, average depth of target, but high percentage passes and relatively efficient high volume rushing, and will be able to achieve a similar ceiling Tom Brady had in today's NFL?
I don't think that they are going to skew deliberately low in terms of average depth of target, not crazily. So, you know, there have been offenses in Tom Brady's past with the Patriots where it was all, you know, low, short, over the middle, Wes Welker, 5 yards at a clip type of stuff. And it was deliberately skewing short in terms of average depth of target, but high volume, high efficiency, high percentage plays. I don't think they're going to skew that way with Mac Jones. I think he might skew that way initially, just because that's kind of how rookies are in terms of leaning a little bit conservative until they get a full feel for what they can achieve out there. But I think we saw he's got a willingness to just identify the open guy. And if it's the open guy's 15 yards downfield, that's the shot he'll take. If the open guy's 5 yards downfield, that's the shot he'll take. So yeah, I don't think it's going to skew that way specifically.
Well done.
Thank you.
I would say, I think you described Mac Jones in the same way Tom Brady had been described through the years. Who's his favorite receiver? The open one, right? He just makes the right decisions. Will it hit the same ceiling as Tom Brady? I'm just going to emphatically say no, because right. I think Brady's the best quarterback of all time, and I think he's done it in every potential scenario. They weren't a dink and dunk offense. As you said, there were years they threw shorter. 2017, they didn't have a short game. Julian Edelman was hurt. They threw the ball down the field. The Patriots are good at adjusting. So I do think there might be like high percentage passes, yes. But I really think if Mac Jones is the starter, Josh McDaniels will adjust to his skill set. And the Patriots, what they do well when they're at their best is have answers. The thing I always say, they have answers. If the run game's there, they take it. Short passes are there, they take it. Deep ball, they take it. And I think Mac Jones is capable of running that type of offense.
Yeah, and they were a dink and dunk offense in certain years, but it's not like the default position of that offense.
Yeah, and if you look at Brady's average depth of target historically, it's league average. It's right around the average.
Nah, sorry, not enough time.
Miami Dolphins. Again, I didn't get a name for this. What is the average PFF grade needed for the Miami Dolphins offensive line for this team to make the playoffs? Wondering if you could provide some averages for offensive lines in recent seasons. I didn't look up the specific averages, but we can definitely give you an idea. I'll look at last year's playoff teams, but you can go
ahead. Well, I think critically, it's almost the wrong way of looking at it. Like the point is not the average grade for the offensive line collectively in order to make the playoffs. Offensive line is a weak link system. It's how bad is your weakest link and how big of a problem is that and how many of them do you have? So five guys on the offensive line, five links in the chain. If your weakest link is playing in the 40s in terms of PFF grade, maybe even the 50s, you've got a significant problem. If you have a couple of those guys, you're almost dead in the water. It's extremely difficult to overcome multiple guys on the offensive line playing badly enough that the entire offense is being undercut by it, like both in terms of pass protection for Tua and run blocking for everybody else. So I'm not concerned about whether the average is 50, 60, 70, whatever. I'm concerned about how bad your weakest players are.
If we just look at last year's playoff teams, just sorting by PFF pass blocking grade, the only playoff teams that had a pass blocking grade in the 20s were the Tennessee Titans, who ranked 28th. However, they were a top five.
Grade in the 20s. I was like, that's bad.
They ranked 28th. They were in the 50. They were 58 pass blocking grade. They had one of the best run blocking units, though, and they were a run heavy team. And then the Bears, who really, they were an 8 and 8 team. The Dolphins finished 21st in pass blocking grade. I just think that needs to jump up a few spots. And then they were 30th in run blocking grade. So yes, the offense, if again, having answers, the Dolphins are going to want times where they want to be able to run the ball efficiently. So they have to be better from a run blocking standpoint, better from a pass blocking standpoint. I think you want to get into the teens in both of those numbers.
I think that's a good cutoff, that if you are above 20th in terms of pass blocking grade, you're probably okay. Now, again, not necessarily. If you have the weak link in the wrong place, it's not automatic, but I would say that's a reasonable rule of thumb.
Oh, there it was, right at the buzzer.
Almost buzzered me off.
Before we get into the AFC North, got to tell you about our friends over at Fantrax. Fantrax is free. Fantasy Football League Manager is the most customizable, easy-to-use, and feature-rich platform in the entire industry. PFF is gearing up to play our leagues on Fantrax this season. Feature multi-team trades, bonus points for touchdowns of different yardage, and if you're coming from another site, it's not a problem. Fantrax can import any of your current leagues completely free. Create a free account now using promo code PFF at fantrax.com/PFF and get a chance to win a trip to any regular season game this year for you and your entire league, plus $6,000. Promo code is PFF at fantrax.com/PFF. Look at us moving efficiently.
Yeah.
All the way through this. I'm just going to tweet it out that we're live right now.
Okay.
As we go here. It makes for less time to do that. But let's go to the AFC North.
I kind of want to see you try and pronounce this guy's name.
I don't know what's happening here. DiLorno? DiLorno. You should be the name person.
No. This is all you.
At DiLorno, D-Y-L. Anyway, somebody on Twitter says, what is the Steelers? This is Steelers question.
Yeah.
What is the Steelers' floor/ceiling if Ben is a top 10 quarterback in 2021?
It's a good question. I think if he's a top 10 quarterback, their floor is pretty high. Like, the defense should still be really, really good, even if the offensive line is a train wreck. Like, those two things, the assumption that Ben is a top 10 quarterback kind of makes an assumption about how good the offensive line is. Like, there's almost no way he's a top 10 quarterback if the offensive line is a total and utter unmitigated disaster. So if he is, you've got to assume the offensive line is at least passable, at which point, like, the Steelers are in contention. Their floor is not 9-7. What's 9-8? Win, like, it's a winning team. And then their ceiling is they're a contender, like a legitimate Super Bowl contender.
Yeah, I think their ceiling is they're in the AFC Championship. I mean, they could go to the Super Bowl, but I think they could get to the AFC Championship, compete with the Chiefs, the Ravens, the Bills, whoever else is up there. That's so if Big Ben is a top 10 caliber quarterback, the thing that would put them toward their floor is the offensive line is still rough, and I do still have concerns about that secondary. However, the Steelers the last 2 years have had a top 5 caliber defense, the best defense in the league 2 years ago. So that's still in the range of outcomes. So if they do have one of those years where the defense is great and Big Ben is a top 10 quarterback, yeah, they're a Super Bowl contender.
But you agree that, like, if Ben is a top 10 quarterback, we are making some assumptions about that offensive line as well. Like, there's very small chance that he's a top 10 quarterback if the offensive line is a total disaster.
The offensive line, Matt Canada, the play action stuff, the motion stuff, there's an assumption that a lot of that has come together. It's not just Big Ben, you know, getting back there and just ripping it with no help. Right. I think there's going to be help that would help, that would get him to that top 10.
Yeah, a little bit like Aaron Rodgers last year, where undoubtedly the changes that they made to that offense in terms of shifts and motions and bunch formations and all that kind of stuff, it helped. It wasn't just the Aaron Rodgers revenge tour, you know, motivated by Jordan Love. They helped him along as well in terms of what they did to the offense.
Don't forget, by the way, I remember this all the time. Peyton Manning hated motion, liked to have things static and just adjust. So motion's not always...
There we go.
Just cut me off.
She's like second guessing herself. She doesn't trust it.
Just do it.
You got to see it. You got to hit it.
I will stop as soon as you say it. Cleveland Browns. Nick Spaulley asks. That was an easy name.
Yeah.
What do the Browns need to do this season? And what does Baker Mayfield need to do this season to finally shut everyone up and end the debate revolving around if Baker Mayfield is a good quarterback?
See, it's tough because I think if he has a really, really good season, and honestly, he should have a career year this year. If he does that, there's going to be a huge amount of people that look at that and say, well, it's because everything was set up for it, right? I mean, this is kind of the conversation we were having about Dak Prescott last year. It's like going into last season, you're saying Dak Prescott should have a career year because this is the best group of receivers he's ever had. The offensive line should be good. The things they're doing on offense are the right types of things. There's no reason Dak won't be the best version of Dak we've ever seen. Same thing is true with Baker. This should be the best version of Baker we've ever seen. But the reason we're able to predict that is because we are assigning a lot of that credit to everything else around him.
Are you using that same standard for Josh Allen? Josh Allen had his best situation. He's got a top five receiver in the NFL, wherever Stephon Diggs is, but Diggs played like a top five receiver last year. Do you apply that same standard?
A little bit, but like the situation was already good for Allen and he didn't play well. Like the year before wasn't a bad situation. Okay, Diggs changes it, but it doesn't. It was already a good situation that Diggs enhanced. It wasn't a bad situation rescued by the addition of Stephon Diggs. Like they already had very good coaching and play calling. The offensive line was already fine. The receiving group was already good. It became great with the addition of Diggs. Like the Browns have transformed a lot. And I think a lot of that credit is going to go to all those things.
But what Allen did, and the reason why you gave him credit, is because he graded at 90 plus. Right. Yes. To me, that's the answer. Like, what does Baker Mayfield need to do from a PFF standpoint? Post an elite grade, post a 90 grade. I would say we don't have those answers if he has a 78 or an 80 grade and he has really good stats and the Browns win a lot of games. If the question is about Baker Mayfield, post an elite grade and then we'll all shut up. Even though the situation has helped him, a 90 elite positive grade like that would answer that question.
If he grades like he did from week 7 last season onwards, I think that answered that.
Wow. Well done.
That was good.
Cincinnati Bengals, Kyle Phelps on Twitter asks, who do you think the Bengals' starting offensive line should be?
Should be.
And this is with the not-so-great start from Jackson Carmen killing my initial depth chart projections.
Okay. Well, Jonah Williams should be the left tackle. Easy.
Yes.
I think Quentin Spain probably should be their left guard. Trey Hopkins should be their center because the alternative is Billy Price, and you don't want a piece of that, Steve. Right guard, it's Michael Jordan, Jackson Carmen.
Maybe Billy Price in there too.
No. Honestly, start Jackson Carmen. Like, how bad could it be? If that's your one weak link and
he's
the rookie.
It could be bad. It could be really bad.
It's already bad. Michael Jordan is bad. If that's your one weak link and he's the rookie, I say throw him out there and let's try and patch it up. And then right tackle is Riley Reiff.
I would roll with Michael Jordan right now based off of the reports and everything we've seen, heard from Jackson Carmen at camp, rolling with the third team and them, you know, not having a ton of faith in him. There's the chance that Michael Jordan has that year 3 bump. It would have to be a significant bump for him to be good because he's really struggled. But I think that Jonah Williams, Quentin Spain, Trey Hopkins, and Riley Reiff at right tackle, I think those are the four. I think it's a battle at right guard.
I think there's also a possibility that Donte Smith gets a left guard spot if Quentin Spain doesn't bounce back to where we keep saying he can be. You know, this idea of Spain's actually got some good play on his resume at the NFL level, but it's getting further and further in the rearview mirror. And at some point, you have to sort of look at the way he's actually playing and say, you know what, Quentin, you don't appear to be the player we thought you once were, or at least aren't within this current set of circumstances. We're going to turn to the backup option.
Jackson Carmen had a 48 grade in the preseason opener on the back of bad reports coming out of camp. And I would also say, just keep an eye on the waiver wire. Like, there are people that will hit the waiver wire who are probably better than your two guards. Potentially better than your two guards, and I think that's a play.
A lot of his, like, all of his struggles seem to be basically outside zone. I didn't think he looked that bad in terms of the really important stuff, like pass blocking for Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
So, there we go.
Baltimore Ravens from Jean-Paul Velu.
Wow.
How's that? Jean-Paul Velu. Another offensive line question. In 2019, Lamar Jackson operated by PFF's behind. PFF's number 2 ranked offensive line. He was unanimous MVP, then Hall of Famer, future Hall of Famer. Marshall Yanda retires. Ronnie Stanley gets hurt last year. They end up as the number 16 offensive line. Obviously, any offense is going to struggle a little bit more as your offensive line regresses. So the two questions are, is there some level of offensive line needs to reach, the offensive line needs to reach to make the Ravens offense click? And will the Ravens get there based off the moves they made this offseason?
Yeah, this is a good question, I think, because all the focus has been on wide receiver for the Ravens. It's like, what does this offense function when we put a number one wide receiver in there? And we draft Rashad Bateman, we bring in Sammy Watkins, we're like, okay, that part's fixed. But I think there is a legitimate question about how much has the decline in the offensive line play been a contributing factor to this offense stagnating and spinning its wheels and potentially going backwards. And I don't think we know that either. Like this, we've definitely gone backwards in a fairly major way from when they were one of the best offensive lines in the NFL. Obviously, as the guy says, anytime you lose a player as good as Marshall Yanda, that's pretty much inevitable. But when you look on paper right now, Kevin Zeitler might bounce back and the great Alejandro Villanueva.
Thank you.
Should be at least a static move in terms of where Orlando Brown was at right tackle, but he's apparently been struggling so far, as has Zeitler, to be honest. And then that you look at on paper, 4 out of 5 are down.
I think the Ravens don't need to get to that incredible level. The run game last year was play for play, just as efficient as it was in 2019. You'd like to get them a little bit better from a pass pro standpoint. So I don't think they need to get up to number 2 or 3 or 4. I think just going from 16th to 10th maybe closes the gap enough. Again, the run game is just as much predicated on Lamar Jackson's presence and misdirection, and the offensive line gets put into favorable situations in part because of that. And I think having Villanueva there, I think that's essentially a lateral move as far as pass pro goes.
Should
from
be.
From where Orlando Brown would be. Lateral move, maybe it's a little bit worse in the run game. So my question is on the interior. It's not as good as when Yanda was there, but I think they can be a top 10 caliber unit, and I think that'll be good enough when it comes to the Ravens getting back on track offensively.
Okay.
AFC South is next. Tennessee Titans. In terms of team building, this is a tough one here, but in terms of team building, where do you rank GM John Robinson among other league GMs, considering the roster he inherited in 2016 and how he's turned around that team since then?
I think he's done a really good job, but it's also, it's an intriguing one because so much of their success right now is based off like 3 players. So to what extent is that sound team building and, you know, great process and all that kind of stuff? And to what extent is that just
he found those players.
Yeah. But like that's the Bill Polian and Peyton Manning conversation, right? It's like how much of an achievement is it to just draft a Hall of Famer when you had the number one overall pick? And okay, to his credit, there was extensive debate at the time, though God knows why, between Peyton Manning and Ryan Leaf. So he had to make that call and he made the right one. But at that point, like, you're set up. You just sit back and relax and Peyton takes care of the rest. Same with Bill Belichick, Tom Brady. He had to make the call to put Tom Brady in there over Drew Bledsoe. And that was a ballsy call that not that many coaches, I guess, would have made.
That's different than stumbling into Peyton.
Correct. But at the point he does that, you're done. You're set for life. It's like a lottery ticket, right? At that point, Brady is taking care of everything for you. You can kick back and relax.
I would say John Robinson's done a top 10 to 12 job without going and hand ranking every single GM. They were 9-7 for 4 straight years.
Yeah.
And I think you also have to give them credit for
how much better than 9-7 are they now?
They were 11-5 last year, and right. They were better than
so
that
two
when,
games.
But they were better than that when Ryan Tannehill took over too. So this is where he deserves credit. When you make a move, signing a backup quarterback named Ryan Tannehill is a good high upside play that paid off. So I think he deserves credit for that. It was a play that paid off.
Yeah.
Right? It was a good process that doesn't always pay off. I think the Raiders made a good move making Marcus Mariota their backup. It hasn't paid off yet the same way a Tannehill thing, but I think the process was sound. So I think Robinson's done a really good job. I think he may have, you know, rejigged the secondary well enough that they're going to be okay. So I think the Titans are, I think they've done a really nice job. They've gone from 9-7 to AFC South contender, maybe leader.
And he traded for Tannehill as well.
All right, after the Titans, we got the Houston Texans. That's a good question here. Can you remember a franchise in worse state than Houston in recent memory? Watson's legal issues included. If he is cleared, then he is too valuable for this to be true. So with the legal issues around Watson, is this the worst situation for a team we've seen?
It's definitely right there. The only one I could think of that was comparable, because you can't just look at a team that's terrible, right? There have been winless teams. What is it? The 08 Lions, the Browns. There have been terrible, terrible football teams. But you have to have a degree of like chaos in the front office and circus swirling around the team as well for it to be as bad as this Houston situation right now. At which point, the only one I can really think of is like midway through the Hugh Jackson thing with Cleveland, where evidently it was going nowhere. Hard Knocks is in the building. There's like infighting in all the coaches that are there. They all hate each other. It's not going well. It only goes worse once they get on the field for year two of the Hugh Jackson regime. And at that point, like, you have to blow up everything, clear everybody out of the building, just start over. This whole thing has gone to hell. That's the only situation I could think of that's in the same kind of realm as what we're dealing with in Houston right now.
Yeah, I would vote yes. This is the worst situation I can remember for a couple of reasons. It's not just everything that's happened right now and the Watson stuff. It's also because I don't know what the future looks like. I don't see a path to the future. So even when the Browns were falling apart, it was like, all right, there's a few good draft picks here. There's some good players there. There's maybe some building blocks. I just don't even see that on the Texans roster, especially if Watson remains a big question mark. David Culley is the head coach. One of the other Texans questions was, does David Culley last more than a year?
Even through the year.
He kind of feels like he's not going to be the long-term answer as
did
the
coach.
Did
you see his answer about analytics?
I did.
Not great.
It was not great at all. He's just going to go by gut and feel and what have you. And I know it becomes this big battle between football guys and the nerds and all that stuff, but it's about process and understanding decision-making, and I'm just not sensing that.
And that's just immediately bad process. It's like, I don't care what the sheet says. If I'm not feeling it, we're not doing it. You're like,
the point about those decisions is that the numbers tell you the next five steps down the road. It's not just about, are you going to get it or are you not? It's that it takes into account all of the next situation, so you at least should reference.
You need a better answer than that.
Bad situation in Houston. Houston Colts? The Indianapolis Colts. This is from Morgan Acuff. That last question was from Adam Gorbel, by the way, for the Texans. The Colts, Morgan Acuff. Should the Colts ease Wentz back in order to get a look at Jacob Eason? Say postpone a return, maybe a week. You know, make sure he's fully healthy. Ensure that you get a look at the young guy. First game is against a pretty beatable Seahawks defense. Would want Wentz fully healthy for the Rams.
Yes, that second part is fairly important. I think the more important element is not to like get a look at Jacob Eason. I think just the worst thing you could do is have Carson Wentz come back and what was an acute injury becomes a chronic injury. And now you're dealing with a guy that's sort of banged up for the entire season. That foot never gets right. And you have no earthly idea what Carson Wentz is capable of at the end of the year. At the very minimum, let's put him out there when he's 100% and at least try and figure out if this Frank Reich reclamation project can function. So I don't think it has anything to do with Jacob Eason. It just has to do with, do not put Carson Wentz back on the field until he is 100% healthy, because you need to have some idea if the trade you made is a long-term thing or if you just knee-jerk and threw away a second-round pick.
I agree with everything you're saying there. Make sure Wentz is healthy. I think it might be an added bonus to see what Jacob Eason has.
Yes.
I would also say I would not agree with the part of the Seahawks are easy. I mean, even if the defense isn't as good as the Rams, the Seahawks have a good offense. You have to score a lot of points against the Seahawks. If you're the Colts, there's a chance you're going to be within a game of the playoffs this year. So I don't think you can throw games away to see Jacob Eason. I'm fully with you. You have a potential 4-year investment in Carson Wentz. Maximizing that investment is the play. It is the long-term answer. Just make sure Wentz is as healthy as possible. Let's go to the Jaguars. It's Mr. James 73. This was from Twitter. The Jags have a lot of personnel decisions from the summer that were risky moves. Except for record, what can we look for on the field for judging these moves? What would be plausible expectations from the free agent and rookie class? And what do we want to see in terms of offensive, defensive scheme, clock management, et cetera?
Big thing I want to see that I'm now concerned about based off that first preseason game is everything that we talked about being excited for, this combination of matchup weapons, the Travis Etienne playing as a hybrid player, you know, training at wide receiver and then being able to move into the backfield, out of the backfield, LaVisca Chenault as well, same kind of thing. The Jags have a ton of these guys, and they've been talking a big game about how creatively they're going to use them. Now, look, it's preseason game.
Did you think you were going to see that in the preseason?
Well, teams have been doing it. Like, this has been a fairly creative preseason in terms of schematic things. Teams are putting out there what they're going to be running. Okay, it's preseason week one. Maybe they're keeping the powder dry. But we saw none of that in week one. We saw LaVisca Chenault force-fed a bunch of wide receiver screens. We saw Travis Etienne being used as just a third down back. If that is the extent of the creativity involved in Travis Etienne, that's miserable. I want to see evidence of that creativity that they've been talking about with all those offensive playmakers. And I haven't seen any of it yet.
Yeah, I want to see a bunch of stuff. I want to see how Urban Meyer manages the game. So the question was clock management. I want to see how aggressive he is on fourth down, some of the general analytics-driven stuff. You know, how much do they – how aggressive are they? So that's one of them. As far as defensively, if they do keep C.J. Henderson, and another one of the Jags questions asked this, a big guy in C.J. Henderson, big Shaquille Griffin, and drafted another big guy in Tyson Campbell. If those are their top three corners, what does that look like? Typically, you think of your slot corner as shorter and shiftier and all that stuff. But if you play a zone-heavy system, like Jalen Ramsey plays in the slot a lot for the Rams because they play a lot of zone, the Jaguars can probably do that schematically, play a lot of zone. And what you do is you get some length and you tighten up passing lanes and all that stuff. So I want to see what they do with that secondary, with those guys. I want to see what Urban Meyer does. And of course, Trevor Lawrence and the whole deal. So the Jaguars are fascinating, right? Everything that you said, Trevor Lawrence's development, how Urban Meyer handles the NFL game, not having the best players. He's always had the best players. Want to see how they handle that.
Oh, that was weak.
I thought that was good. I thought that was polite.
That felt like someone who's given up on the idea.
Before we get to the AFC West, Pacquiao versus Ugas is this weekend, and DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app, is offering 100-to-1 odds on a punch being landed at any point during the fight. I think it might happen, Sam. That's right. Bet $1 on either fighter, and if a punch lands during the fight, you will win. You will cash $100 in free credits. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code PFF when you sign up to turn $1 into $100 in free credits when you bet on either fighter to win and a punch is landed during the fight. Place your bet and watch the fist fly this weekend. It's code PFF. Turn $1 into $100 in free credits only at DraftKings Sportsbook. You know that you must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana.
Wow.
Getting faster and faster.
It's good.
Next up, Micro Machines. Remember the Micro Machines guy? The fast speaker? He did all that? Yeah. I'm almost to that level.
I remember.
He was on Saved by the Bell.
Else will. Yeah. It's like 12 people listening.
Raise your hand in the chat if you watch Saved by the Bell and you remember the guy.
It's like 12 people listening.
He was a history teacher and he was talking about the Continental Congress and he did a really fast Saved by the Bell episode. All right, AFC West, Chargers. The Gen Z folks in the control room.
No idea what you're talking about.
Alyssa, do you ever watch Saved by the Bell, Ethan?
Yes, I watched Saved by the Bell.
Okay, good.
They understand Saved by the Bell. Nobody understands the Micro Machines reference.
He was on one of the...
I know that. I am one of the 12 people. I'm telling you, that's the extent of it, though.
I appeal to all 12 of you. The Chargers, from John Cooper. From an analytical standpoint, which unit do you think will be better for the Chargers this year, the offense or the defense?
I have more confidence, I think, in the offense. I think both could be good.
Same.
There's a chance that the Chargers are rolling in the right direction. Everything's going well. And we've been saying for a while that like the personnel on defense is good. And they've been waiting for a guy like Brandon Staley to come in and just put the scheme around it and let it all function. And obviously, if we finally, please football gods, get a healthy year of Derwin James, that I think has a transformative effect on this defense, regardless of where he's playing. Like, put him at corner, put him at safety, put him at, you know, movable chess piece, wherever you want him. Line him up a linebacker. I don't care. Derwin James being on the field for a full season will have a transformative effect on this defense. But I think you just have to have more confidence about the talent and the scheme and everything on offense being better.
I agree with you on the offense. Justin Herbert, 79.9 PFF grade last year, even if it was the highest passer rating under pressure, that's going to regress a little bit. We are expecting this offensive line to be better. Rashawn Slater had a nice debut at left tackle. Corey Linsley, top-graded center last year, comes in. Matt Filer, the guy that we loved in free agency because he could play left guard, play right tackle. So the line will be better. Thrown to Mike Williams, thrown to Keenan Allen. I think their third options being, you know, deep threat potential like Tyron Johnson and Josh Palmer, who looked good as a rookie. Donald Parham, our Chargers fans wanted us to mention in the preview, 6'8". had a couple touchdowns last year between him and Jared Cook. I think the weapons, Herbert's development, the offensive line, I'm going offense. But I am looking forward to seeing that Staley defense and seeing if he's the new boy wonder when it comes to defense, the Sean McVay equivalent.
Donald Parham, XFL star.
Yeah.
Dallas Renegades.
He's a monster, and I think he pairs well with what Herbert does. All right, Kansas City Chiefs. This is from Riley Whitson. Do you think the Chiefs plan to scheme up our mid-level corners in the Spagnuolo method? That's Spags.
Yes.
If that'll continue to work. So their plan to just, scheme it up and not necessarily have a true number one corner. Or should they invest in a legitimate alpha corner? No shade to my guy, Legarius, that being Legarius Sneed, who had a fantastic rookie season. What should the Chiefs do at corner?
Well, I don't think it's a deliberate scheme as a start. Like, I don't think they're deliberately going out there going, we don't want a number one corner. I do think
they value pass rushers more than corners, though, in this system.
Yeah. Like, they could have taken the Frank Clark money and instead thrown that at a legitimate superstar corner, and they didn't. They went pass rush ahead. So, yeah, that's fair. But I don't think they wouldn't turn down the opportunity at a legit superstar at corner if one was presented to them. They're just not going out of their way to acquire that guy for a ton of money or for the first round draft pick that it would have cost. Now, I think they could, like Clyde Edwards-Helaire versus a number one draft pick at corner, I would go with the corner. But like, I think they would value that in this defense. But the defense functions because of all the things that they do. Like the interception or the dropped interception that they had on Trey Lance, they sent four guys from one side of the field covering that up with a couple of DBs to cover two or three pass patterns in a preseason game. Like, it's an insane blitz to be calling generally, let alone in the preseason, but the Chiefs are willing to roll that out there.
You're done. I would say I'm with you. They wouldn't turn down the alpha corner. And I think if they had that guy, Spags would make use of him, right? He adjusts to what his defense does, as you just described in that Niners game. I also think their strategy of taking shots on former first rounders like Mike Hughes, like DeAndre Baker, who if you go and you check out his preseason grade, if you have PFF Elite, go check it out. I'm not even going to say it, all right? Because it was really good. And I only want elite users to go and check out, search DeAndre Baker, former first round pick, and what he did in week one on 29 snaps. They might be able to stumble into some of these guys by taking these shots. And of course, Legarius Sneed was fantastic. So I think the Chiefs can make do. Travarius Ward is a pretty good press man guy. They could use an alpha corner for sure. The trickle-down effect is very important when it comes to building a secondary. But I think Spags does a really good job of making do with what they have.
Yep.
So I hedged.
Nice.
But if they have one, they'll take it. Las Vegas Raiders. Muigs Malone? Malone? What? Magic Muigs? Somebody on Twitter says, if Carr becomes more aggressive with the ball and the defense is better, does that put the Raiders in the playoffs? How much better, I think, is probably a fair question.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. It certainly takes steps in the right direction. Carr doesn't need to be more aggressive than last year. I think he needs to maintain that level of aggression. Like, last season was a step up from where they'd been, and it sort of rediscovered his ability to push the ball down the field, which we hadn't seen since that, 2016 season. So we went, 4 years between those kinds of seasons. He needs to maintain that this year. Nelson Agholor has left. They have to hope that Henry Ruggs or John Brown or the combination of both of those keep him as aggressive as he was last season in terms of pushing the ball down the field. They need that in the offense to hang with teams like the Chiefs and the Chargers within that division. The defense, obviously needs to get significantly better because right now it's terrible. It's bad, top to bottom. The talent looks awful. The guys they've drafted haven't done well. Like, that defense needs to take big steps for them to be a playoff team.
Yeah, the question is, of course, if Carr's aggressive and they have another really efficient offense and the defense gets better, of course they're a playoff contender. I mean, there's the AFC, I think, is wide open after the top couple teams at the top. Seeds 4 through 7 could be completely wide open in the AFC. So the Raiders should be in that mix. But as far as the what ifs, what does Carr's aggressiveness lead to? Last year, he had 7.9 yards per attempt, highest average depth of target of his career at 8.5. I might push that even further, right? I mean, with tapping into Henry Ruggs' downfield ability, you have Hunter Renfrow, the great Hunter Renfrow, who's ready to take on Jalen Ramsey, and he can take on anybody. He's working the underneath stuff. You have Darren Waller, one of the better mismatch weapons. So yeah, be aggressive. Tap into those playmakers. But everything you said about the defense, maybe Gus Bradley simplifies it enough that they could be league average. I think if they're average, the Raiders have a shot to make a run because the offense is potentially that good. But the Raiders have been really far away from an average defense for a few years now. Renner just posted a great tweet. I don't know, it's going out there somewhere, but 200 snaps and a grade above 70 for defensive players. The Raiders haven't had one since Khalil Mack.
Yeah.
That's pretty poor.
Yeah, it's terrible.
All right, let's wrap it up with the Broncos. This is an easy one. Oh, so I didn't take the easy one. The easy one was Locker Teddy Bridgewater. The one I did take from Petty Trayton, at Penny Trayton or Trayton Petty on Twitter. Do you think Drew Lock has the potential to be an upper/mid-tier starting quarterback?
Well, let's answer the other one as well.
And then Teddy or Lock?
Yeah, I would take Drew Lock because I just don't see the purpose in Teddy at this point. I don't think that the team is good enough overall for the level that Teddy is at to take them to a Super Bowl. It just isn't. So do you see the potential in Lock to be an upper mid-tier starting quarterback? Yeah, like I think the potential is there. Look, the number to hang your hat on if you're the Broncos is last year he had that big time throw rate of 6.4%. That's higher than Josh Allen. It's higher than Matthew Stafford. It's higher than Justin Herbert. It's higher than a lot of good quarterbacks. Now, okay, he offset that by being inaccurate, inefficient, and having a really high turnover worthy play rate. So it's not like that's the reason that he's going to be good, but you need that. Like, if you're going to have that big-time throw rate, there's something there. You just need to get a lot better at all the other things in order for you to reach that plane. But that, to me, says the potential for that at least exists.
I would say that the potential to have upper mid-tier production is there with Drew Lock. I think having him actually grade and rank, say, in the top 15 is probably unlikely as far as quarterbacks
go. Unlikely, but I think it's potentially possible.
Yeah, I mean, anything's possible, Sam.
Not anything.
I mean, you could be the starting quarterback for the Broncos.
There was never any chance that Christian Hackenberg would get there.
That's a good point. So Drew Lock's career grades on 417 snaps in 2019, 53. Last year on 848 snaps, he was a 63. So maybe he's going to be a 73.
Yeah, based off what I'm saying.
But that wouldn't even be top 15 is the deal, well, right? It would have to be a significant jump. But I think when you build a passing offense, it's all about your playmakers. It's all about the whole deal. And I think the Broncos have top five potential as far as their playmakers go with Jerry Jeudy, with Cortland Sutton coming back, with KJ Hamler and the great Tim Patrick and Noah Fant. So, yes, I would say Drew Lock can have top 15 production, but not top 15 actual play per PFF grades.
Hater.
Let's get to the NFC. Look at us. This is fun. We're enjoying this show. NFC, the Cowboys. Nick Nielsen Bean at Nico Bino on the Twitter machine. Would the Cowboys be better off trading one of their top three wide receivers for a decent corner? Their top three receivers being Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, and then the most likely one to be traded would be Michael Gallup, who's gone from their two to their three option now.
No, don't. You're amazing at one position group. You don't make that okay just to get better at a bad position group. I say lean into the one thing that you're incredible at, take advantage of the fact that nobody in the NFL can match up with your 1-2-3 at wide receiver, surround Dak Prescott with the weaponry for him to be great, and roll with that. Like, I don't like the idea of trying to get sort of level across the board. If you can lean into an area of excellence, almost regardless of where it is, whether it's your secondary, your defensive line, your wide receiver group, maybe not your offensive line just because of what we know about everything else, lean into the group that's great. Don't sort of don't rob from Peter to pay Paul and just get like okay across the board at every position group.
I agree with you overall. I would say the one thing, if you did want to take a long-term approach, the one thing that might make me do that is if Michael Gallup's entering the last year of his contract.
Yes.
Almost certainly can't come back. They can't pay Michael Gallup, CeeDee Lamb, and Amari Cooper going forward. So their wide receiver three is going to be something that the Cowboys have to solve next year, regardless. If you were trading Michael Gallup, and I don't know who the corners would be, but if you were trading him for a good corner, a Michael Gallup caliber cornerback with, say, 2 years left on his contract, it could be a potential win. I think there's the potential win there. The other part of it is if you trade a Michael Gallup and you get a compensatory pick back and that becomes a third rounder, I mean, that's what you're balancing. So I'm going to stick with Michael Gallup, to your point, give Dak all the weapons, win through the passing game in today's NFL, and do what you can with what you have from cornerback.
And remember, right now, like, you're only an injury away from that just being two starters again.
True.
Like, one guy goes down for 6 weeks and your starting trio that was uncoverable becomes just two guys.
Right. Your third receiver is not a luxury. It's a necessity.
Yeah.
And thinking about it as a necessity, we're done with the Cowboys.
Good beat. Good beat.
All right. On to the Washington football team. There were two good questions. I wrote them both down. Let's see where we go here. Don Crehan. With the NFL's growing trend from efficiency to explosiveness, do you think the team showing the greatest surprise in that direction over the last year will be Washington because of four guys with 4-3 speed, Terry McLaurin, Curtis Samuel, De'Ami Brown, and Antonio Gibson, together with Fitzpatrick's irresistible urge to get his receivers the ball? Ian Moran also asks, if Fitzpatrick plays well and wins a playoff game, could Washington sign him for the next 2 to 3 years? So I'll combine those into one from both Don and Ian.
Well, overall, I am excited about what this offense could look like. I have a similar reservation about this offense that I now have about Jacksonville, which is you have a loaded group of playmakers who are tailor-made for this creative matchup weapon, moving guys around offense, and have shown almost no inclination to actually do that. Where is that, and why is it not on full display? So that is my one sort of caveat about how good this group is. But I really like where they can be. If Fitzpatrick plays well, if Washington makes the playoffs, if they win a playoff game or two, absolutely, I think they're thinking about bringing him back. Like, why would you not? At this point, they are in this world of sort of treading water with veteran quarterbacks until they somehow stumble into an opportunity for a much better one, right? If they win the division, make the playoffs, win a game, they are picking low down in the draft. There's probably not going to be a great option available in a free agency, certainly not one that would be better than Fitzpatrick if he'd had a great season. So, yeah.
You're done.
Extend him.
I agree. I'm excited about the 4-3 speed guys. You know, last year at this time, or even 2 years ago at this time, it was like, who is Washington throwing to? Then Terry McLaurin emerges. And then last year at this time, it's Terry McLaurin and who else? Now you've got Curtis Samuel, De'Ami Brown, Antonio Gibson. I think the potential is certainly there, to your point. Got to do more with that on the field. I still think Fitzpatrick's a bridge quarterback. Even if he's good, you're going
to
be...
But you need to bridge to something. At the moment,
if
they don't
have
the
something.
If he's
a good bridge quarterback, you're not going to have a top 10 or 15 pick. The bridge that I think he's going... The bridge that he's leading to, or whatever, connecting here, might not be a draft pick, though. I think what Washington's play might be here is waiting in the weeds, waiting for the Deshaun Watson...
Right now, he's a pontoon, right? There's no bridge to anything because there's no... There's no other side of the bank. Right now, he's just this floating pontoon out in the river waiting for the other bank to come along.
That was a fast minute. And Sam stole my time.
Can't argue with the clock.
All right. Well, Washington should be looking for a veteran.
Stop. You got buzzered off.
Giants next. Time. Jesse King at J King. I have two for the Giants and pick your favorite. Okay. First, what are your thoughts about the OBJ trade at the time and now, 3 years later? Second is sort of the same question, but thoughts on the Barkley pick then and now. Who would you take at the time? And also, what would you do if you got a redo? I'm going to do two Giants questions because I think they're both good.
So I only want to answer the Barkley one because Gettleman is being quizzed on this at the moment and is sticking to his guns, right? Now, the first part I could kind of get, you know, what are you going to say? Yeah, we screwed it up. We should have drafted anybody but Saquon because the dude's been busted up and hasn't been great for us. So, you know, if I had that pick to do again, God, I wish I'd picked somebody else. So, yeah, look, he's got to say, yeah, I'd still pick Saquon. But he's fighting back at the just unarguable facts that running backs last less time, get injured more than other positions. That's where you're losing this argument because you can't fight that. What you have to say is that even knowing all of that, I think Saquon is such a special talent that it was worth doing. But instead, he's like, no, I reject your premise. Running backs are just as likely to last 25 years in the NFL as quarterbacks are.
You think he's going to say, yeah, I should have taken Josh Allen. I
just told you what he should have said. He should have said, yes, I understand that they will last less time and be more injured, but he's such a special talent that I would still go that way. But instead, he's arguing the facts.
All right. The OBJ trade at the time I thought was a bad one for the Giants. It turns out it probably wasn't all that bad. I think it's a wash. At the time, I probably would have picked Sam Darnold.
Yeah.
If I was the Giants. But I think that's okay because the fallout there, because you're taking a shot and you didn't hit and then you just take another shot, right? So that would have been part of it. I would have taken Sam Darnold. Now I would take Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen. certainly would not take Saquon Barkley. So knowing what we know now, Allen or Lamar, at the time I would have taken Sam Darnold. I got to answer Luke Memory. So just start the timer one more minute. We're doing an extra Giants question.
What?
Because listen, how would Hughes have tried to fix the O-line during the offseason from Luke? You got to answer. How would Hughes have fixed it?
Yeah.
I got an answer. Free agency, Austin Ryder or Ted Karras maybe at center. And then Matt Filer, I would have looked at. But the tackles, you just have to kind of hope for Andrew Thomas development. And then between Nate Solder coming back and Matt Paert to figure out right tackle. But I would have attacked free agency on the cheap.
Okay.
So.
Which you could still do now.
Which you could still do.
Austin Ryder still out there would start for like five teams in the NFL.
I would hit the waiver wire as well, too. Again, I think there will be starting caliber players hit the waiver wire in a couple weeks here. You got to be shrewd. All right, Philadelphia Eagles. Where would you rank the Eagles' secondary in the NFL? CB1 and 2 are very good, but depth is a question mark, so what's your view on them? Where's our PFF secondary?
I was going to say, did you look that up? We've ranked them somewhere.
This is the one thing I did forget to look this one up. I'll get it right here. Entering the season, we've got the Eagles ranked 25th.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds about right. Their safeties, I think, are solid.
That might be harsh.
Darius Slay is supposedly better than we've seen from him for a while now. I think, again, it's sort of the logic that some sooner or later we'll see Darius Slay actually play the way we know he can play. Steven Nelson is a solid move. I think that's a shrewd pickup that could definitely propel the defense in the right direction. And then Avante Maddox as the slot corner. There's been good play in Avante Maddox's past as well. So, yeah, it's a secondary, I think, that has more potential than where we've ranked it, but where we've ranked it is probably fair in terms of how they've actually played recently.
Yeah, I think it depends on the scheme here. I think if you're going to go out there and try to play a ton of press man coverage with this group, Steven Nelson, Darius Slay, I don't know that that's going to work out all that well. I think all those guys play better off coverage, zone-heavy schemes. You mentioned the safeties being solid. If the Eagles play a lot of zone, I think it's a top 12 to 15 potential unit.
Wow.
Because Nelson's a good player. Slay's a good player overall. And Anthony Harris is a really good player. Rodney McLeod's a good player. They're a potentially good unit, but I think it really depends on how they play. And that's also saying they're not good enough to play man, therefore you have to hide them a little bit. But as far as at the end of the year ranking, if they end up top 15 from 25th right now, I wouldn't be that surprised if they're a little protected.
That feels a little bit optimistic. I mean, I could see middle of the pack maybe, but top 10 to 15, I think, is pushing.
15's middle of the pack.
Yeah, but like above top 10 is not.
10 to 15.
That feels a little bit rich.
A Matthew Stafford. All right. Ben Kirkowski. We're going to the Packers. Ben Kirkowski has a monster question, but the basic gist of it is he recites all sorts of PFF grades and tries to explain his premise and this whole thing. The basic gist of it is none of the offensive line history of who the Packers are going to trot out there is not good. Their grading is not good. Is that essentially going to hold the Packers back this season?
No. They have Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. They're fine. Also, like the offense, it's not that bad, is it? Like, what am I missing?
So Rick Wagner was playing right tackle last year. Previously, you saw Brian Bulaga. They have been had a good, solid right tackle for a while. Corey Linsley was the highest graded center, and he has been entrenched there since, 2014? So you have regression at center, likely regression at right tackle, where Billy Turner is a guard playing tackle, and then Lucas Patrick potentially playing right guard. Yeah, I don't...
You have a great left side.
Like, if Billy Turner's playing right guard, if they just had one... If Rick Wagner was back, and he's a tackle, and Billy Turner sneaks back into right guard, and your only big question is at center, I think they're okay. But I think there's a lot of question marks there besides, Bakhtiari's a stud at left tackle, and then it's all questions.
Bakhtiari, Elgton Jenkins.
Jenkins is good.
The left side is fantastic. The right side, we talked before, that they have contingency in Dennis Kelly. Like, if Billy Turner is a disaster.
He's okay. I mean, he's what, the 20th, 25th best right tackle in the NFL?
Right. Which, if you have Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, is fine. Like, if Billy Turner is a train wreck, Dennis Kelly comes in, and suddenly you're back to what you just said. You have 4 out of 5 fine offensive linemen. Aaron Rodgers can probably make up for the fifth not being great, and you're good. The offensive line is not preventing this Green Bay Packers team going anywhere.
Yeah, I don't think it's not going to completely hinder them, but I don't think it's the strength that it's been. There'll be some games where it shows up. How about that? It's going to show up in some games.
Okay.
They're going to lose an extra game or two because of it. I don't have as much faith in the offensive line. All right, Minnesota Vikings. This is from, Mr. Pembish. Ehrun Pembish? How's that?
Sure, yeah.
With the talent level on the roster, is Kirk Cousins raising the team's ceiling or limiting it? Or does it just come down to that darn O-line?
Well, with the current talent level that they have, Kirk Cousins, I don't think, is capable of raising it to a level of, you know, contending.
Cousins is not a ceiling raiser.
No. And so the more interesting thing is, like, not like in the current talent level, he is not helping that improve. But the question is more like, how much is he responsible for the current talent level? Like, how much is his contract responsible for the talent being where it is right now, which he is not elevating to where it needs to go? That, like, it's a sort of circular issue with Cousins. He's not a quarterback that's capable of bringing everybody to a higher plane than they're currently capable of playing at, but he is also responsible for that state of affairs generally, which is why, like, let's be honest, the Vikings are not winning anything with Kirk Cousins as their quarterback.
Yeah, I think Cousins has played well.
Yes, better, I think, than you could have expected when you signed him.
Yeah, he's one of those guys, I think, has always been good statistically. We've talked about this a lot. He's gotten better from a play-by-play grading standpoint. There's still something missing there, and it's probably the stuff that goes above and beyond the grades. It's a lot of the what makes a Brady, a Peyton, what makes those guys great, adjusting to situations and knowing when to be aggressive, knowing when to be conservative, taking care of the ball at the right time. All of that stuff, I think, adds up, and I think that's where Cousins is just not great. So I think he's a good, solid quarterback. I don't think he's ever going to raise the ceiling. I think he can help you be productive on offense, and that's just where he's at.
He's also, like, if you had an elite offensive line in front of him, it might be a different conversation. But the Vikings have consistently missed on the offensive line, and they've never been able to put him in that situation. That is the one thing that might change my mind on this. If Minnesota had a top three offensive line, and you're asking the same question, yes, maybe Kirk Cousins is actually capable of elevating the receiving core to a different level.
Ding, ding, ding. So it does come down to that darn O-line.
Yeah.
Lions, Michael D. Smith says, how likely is it that Goff is an, as opposed to the, answer for the Lions? He can be an answer, giving the small trend to de-emphasize the quarterback and focus resources on other key positions, assuming his salary isn't cost prohibitive long-term, or he takes a, it says haircut?
Yeah, that's a phrase.
Takes a haircut?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was just a term for taking a pay cut?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, if it takes a haircut.
Yeah.
There you go.
You've never heard that before?
I haven't actually. Okay. Or maybe I have, I just didn't remember it.
Yeah.
A lot of other stuff in my brain.
Sure, yeah.
Not
yeah.
room for that. So could Goff be an answer for the Lions?
Micro Machines is in your brain, but that isn't.
Yeah, there's only room for so much.
I don't think he has really much of a shot to be an answer because of the way they prioritize building this team. Like, they would need an unexpected level of performance from the group of players he's throwing to. You would need Hockenson to be really good again. You would need, like, someone like Amon-Ra St. Brown showing up as a rookie and being really good right out of the gate, or one of these other receivers on the depth chart to be unexpectedly a lot better this season, just to give him someone to throw to, because clearly Goff is not, like, raising the performance of everybody around him. So if you're even going to get an idea of whether he can just tread water as a starting quarterback, you're going to need something better than what they currently have on paper. Like, as things look right now, it's like, does he even have a shot?
I think this question's asking more long-term, though.
He's going to make it past this year first, so you've got to see somebody.
2 or 3 years from now, could Goff be the guy? So in other words, could they... I keep thinking, okay, they want to be in the Spencer Rattler sweepstakes. They want to be in the DJ Uiagalelei sweepstakes in 2 years from Clemson. You know, that's the future of the Lions. They're going to draft somebody. But what would it take for Goff for them to say, yeah, we'll build around this guy. We'll make everything around him great. He's made it to the Super Bowl before. We'll do the same thing the Rams did. And to me, that's not the play. I think the way that the Rams thought, even though they paid a lot for Stafford, their thought process of, we got to get better at quarterback. You want to keep getting incrementally better at quarterback. I think that's the best play for the Lions. So I wouldn't say, I like Goff. I think he's a good player. I think you always want to try to get better. So I think he's an answer until they find the answer, sure. but I don't want to take the chance at building around Goff.
Yeah, I mean, my point is, I just don't think they're going to get to that discussion because I don't think they have the receiving group
and
there.
That's fair
for
too.
Him to even make it a conversation that has to be had.
If he elevates that group, then they're going to have it. We'll see.
Yeah, but
okay,
that's not going to happen.
For the Bears, the simple question, when should the Bears start Justin Fields? Go listen to the PFF Daily because we break it all down here today to give Bears fans a little something today. What do you make of the Andy Dalton statement that we joked about at the top? It's his time, Andy Dalton's time. So go to listen to the PFF Daily. It's audio only. Wherever you listen to podcasts, we break down the Bears situation, their offensive line situation, what they should do with Justin Fields, what they should do with the offensive line, or how good the line's going to be. Dalton.
It's not a phrase I would have put out there if I was Andy Dalton.
What would you say?
I understand that as a starting quarterback in the NFL, albeit with an extremely small amount of time before that's no longer the case, you have to have a certain mindset and you're probably quite unhinged as a human being. Like this idea of Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers and Michael Jordan, like those guys being able to find slights in the most absurd and ridiculous things to just power their inner fire and make sure, like, fuel them on the hate of everybody else. There's something to that, right? So when you're Andy Dalton, you can't go out there with the mindset of, like, I'm just keeping this thing warm for Justin Fields over there, and it's only a matter of time before my ass is hooked to the bench. On the other hand, you have to at least be aware that that's the situation. So when you go out there and you're like, oh yeah, this is my job, you just look silly. Like, there's a way of not saying that. There's
it's the
a
truth.
Way.
It's his job. It's what he's the starting quarterback.
Does that matter? When he utters that sentence, he becomes a meme. And there's ways of avoiding being memed.
Oh, that's a different way of saying it. As a former professional athlete,
yeah,
who was was never like the guy or anything, you have to believe in yourself. I'm not disagreeing.
I'm saying you don't say it.
Why? It's his time.
Why?
Matt Nagy said it's his time.
Because you get memed.
It doesn't mean like, oh, it's the Bears quarterback for the next 4 years. You know, Justin's going to be sitting on the bench. Like, right now, it's my time. It might be a week of time. It could be 16 weeks of time. But it's my time.
There are quote graphics out there of Mike Glennon when he said this. All you're doing is creating a bunch of those for you.
That's social media's fault.
Yes.
That's the idiocy of social media. Because Andy Dalton's statement was perfectly fine and people went and made news out of it.
You have to be aware that is going to happen when you open your mouth.
Well, it's people who being stupid making news out of stuff that's not news.
Welcome to 2021.
Yeah. Well, I got to make sure I quote tweet this graphic and show you how snarky I could be. Got to do it.
That's the world today.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's a silly world sometimes.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the NFC South and the Panthers. Andy Dalton. Eric Dare. This is a good one. What is the ceiling for Carolina's offense if they can get play from Darnold that's on par with, say, Kirk Cousins? Know that the offensive line is a huge question, but weapons are all great, and bad defense could force game situations that boost stat lines.
I mean, for a start, it would be borderline miraculous if Sam Darnold had a season comparable to Kirk Cousins this year. I would consider that one of the most unlikely quarterback things that has happened in the past 15 years, including the season we just had from Josh Allen coming out of nowhere.
If Darnold played like Kirk Cousins, he would put up Kirk Cousins-like numbers because it's a very similar situation.
Yes.
Good playmakers, bad offensive line.
So the question is, if they get that out of them, then yeah, like that offense is in good shape. But
then they become exactly the Vikings, right?
Yeah, pretty much. But there's almost no way that happens. Almost none.
You're that out on Sam Darnold.
I mean, again, how big a jump would that be from where he is to Kirk Cousins' levels play? Huge.
It'd be a big jump. Darnold's never graded above, 63, 64?
Yes.
Cousins, even in his even the years where he wasn't a great starter but was elevated statistically, he was a high 70s.
Kirk Cousins has basically had three straight seasons of 80-plus PFF grading.
Yeah, then you would have if Sam Darnold played at that level, you'd have the Vikings.
Right. But that won't happen.
Ouch.
Won't. Just won't. Not a chance.
Can Joe Brady be good enough that they can get Kirk Cousins' level of production, really good stats, or could this be early career? Like, what was you have Cousins' grades up?
Yeah.
What was his lowest full season grade? Like 74, 75?
70.
He had a 70 and he still had a passer rating of like high 90s or 100.
100.8 that year.
Could that happen with the Panthers? I feel like that could happen.
No. Joe Brady couldn't. He got a career worse year out of Teddy Bridgewater last year. Teddy Bridgewater's baseline was higher than anything Sam Darnold has achieved.
All right. Maybe Joe Brady's not as good as you think.
Or maybe Sam Darnold is that bad.
Let's go to the Saints. Lotus Transport LLC.
What?
Yeah.
At Lotus Ship with, Transport.
They a new sponsor for the show? At Ship with Lotus on Twitter. All of the Saints draft day trade-ups from 2016 to 2019. Here they are. David Onyemata, Von Bell, Alvin Kamara, Marcus Davenport, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, and Eric McCoy. Could it be that they are better at targeting NFL talents than other teams?
I mean, it could be. It's, again, the statistics bear out that that doesn't happen for teams for any extended period of time. No team is dramatically better or worse at drafting than any other team once you set the time period long enough.
So it's kind of like the Derrick Henry debate, right? If you look backwards, would you say Derrick Henry has been valuable? Or yes, you would say that. The likelihood that he's going to be valuable going forward based off history or as valuable is not there.
I mean, look, the Saints...
Just real quick, Timo, when he did his draft day studies, did say over the last 10 years, the Saints have been the best talent evaluators.
But on the other hand, they've also traded back into the draft to spite other teams to grab a quarterback who is no longer in the NFL.
So that would be my argument. All these players are nice. If you truly are better at evaluating talent...
Just stay where you are and draft them better.
Wouldn't you, or just draft more times, right?
Or just draft, just stay and draft better players. Like, don't sacrifice the draft picks to go up and grab a guy. Just pick somebody.
Like, for the Marcus Davenport trade, and Marcus Davenport's a good player. For that trade to be worth it, he needed to be worth, what, two first-rounders
yes,
or three?
Two.
He needed to have the value of two first-rounders.
Right.
Which almost certainly... wouldn't happen unless you're a quarterback.
So you're telling me if you're that good at evaluating talent, you can't find a potential second round pick that year that's going to be really good? Just draft that guy,
but just
save your first round pick next year,
yeah,
do it again.
Just the odds that you would find another player comparable to Marcus Davenport where you are actually pretty high, and then you've got another shot at that.
Even if they are better, the process is bad.
So
they're probably not better even if they've had a good run of it.
So to answer Lotus Transport LLC, yes, they've been better at identifying talent, looking backwards. It's still a risky process.
And
perhaps
not,
they could have been even better if they drafted more often rather than
less. It's probably not a long-term sustainable thing. It's just a high end of variance.
All right, let's go to the Falcons. Jim Shepard asks, if the Falcons get off to a bad start, should they look to deal players like Deion Jones and Grady Jarrett and just accept a full rebuild? Is this even possible to do with Matt Ryan still being paid a tremendous sum of money to be the Falcons' starting quarterback next season?
Yeah, I think they are teetering on the brink of this thing needing to be blown up completely and start over. When you look at that defense, it is like Deion Jones, Grady Jarrett, and nothing else. If nobody else sort of puts their head above the parapet and tries to join those guys on the field of battle, just get rid of them. What are they bringing to you? Because those two guys can't form a defense in and of themselves. If the offense doesn't jump forward, which is possible. Look, but I like the coaching moves they've made, both sides of the ball. I think both sides have a potential to get schematically a lot better, which could answer a lot of problems. But the premise of this question is if that doesn't happen. And if it doesn't, then yes, they are in they're in hell. They don't have a long-term solution. Matt Ryan is coming towards the end. The players that they do have that are good are not going to be there at the other side of whatever rebuild is going to happen, at which point tear the whole thing down and let's start over.
Yeah, I like the premise of the tear down if needed. I'm in between whether or not the Matt Ryan thing was a good move. I kind of get it. Like, if you're Arthur Smith and you're like, man, look what I did with Ryan Tannehill. Just give me 2 years of Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan's a better player historically than Ryan Tannehill. Did Ben send you a message?
No.
Okay. Because he said he does think Joe Brady's overrated. Sent me a message. I'm going all in, by the way. Ryan Tannehill's not as good as Matt Ryan. So they're going to give it a shot. But if it doesn't work, I think if it doesn't work right away, the quicker you can move forward, the better if you're the Falcons. So I like the idea of kind of getting the ball rolling on the rebuild.
I
agree.
It doesn't seem like they have much of a choice. If it doesn't work out, what is Grady Jarrett and Deion Jones doing for you at this point? It's two guys. You can't create a defense out of two guys. They're overwhelmed.
As much as the Khalil Mack thing looks bad for the Raiders because of all the picks that they got, there is good process in taking stars and flip and turning that into two or three players going forward if you're rebuilding your roster. So I would do it. Let's go NFC West to wrap it all up. Where are we here? Seahawks to kick things off.
Did you find a Bucks question?
I got to get back to Twitter here. Let me wrap it up with the Bucks. Sorry. I sent out a tweet. Some people answered. Where did it go? Give me a minute here. Okay. One Bucks question.
She's buzzing you off just looking for the question.
I'm just looking for a question here.
Can't do that.
What's the worst position group on the team?
The
Dean,
worst position
Apoka. Group
on the Bucks.
When does Kyle Trask take over for Brady? Next year or 2025? 2035, I would say. All right, Bucks question is worst position group on the team.
They don't have one. I mean, they don't, like... Their worst position
running back.
Group.
Running back.
Okay. Yeah, which is fine. Like,
it's definitely running back, though.
Yeah, and the running backs are fine.
Yep.
Okay, that's they don't the necessarily have a great pass catcher, but they've got multiple guys that can run the ball perfectly well.
Yeah, Ronald Jones was a good runner last year. He was fine. Leonard Fournette, you know, get him into the playoffs. And Giovanni Bernard could just, again, catch those checkdowns. As I said on the South preview, though, the South preview, the secondary is still the most volatile.
Yes.
There's nothing that says, like, oh, they're going to regress or anything like that. Jamel Dean, Carlton Davis, Murphy Bunt, all the good – they have good players there. But if they play a little bit worse, it's the most volatile unit.
It could be
the
weakest position group this season.
Right.
But it's not the weakest position group, I think.
If you're just ranking position groups, I'd say their running back room is the worst.
Sure.
On the team.
I go with that, which is, by the way, is like the perfect position to be in.
Which is great.
Right? Yeah. As all this talk of running backs don't matter, if that is in fact the case, having running back being your weakest position group heading into the season is the perfect situation to be in.
Because it was the weakest group on their team last year as well. Which and they did win the Super
won
Bowl.
Won the Super Bowl, right. To the best of my knowledge.
You could probably say the same thing about the Chiefs the year before. The running back room was the worst.
Well, they went and addressed it with a first round running back, so that's okay.
They did. They solved it all. All right. NFC West, the Seahawks. At Paranjay Patil, Mr. Patil. Will the Seahawks be good enough in the trenches to be a serious contender in the NFC?
This is worth doing just to hear you pronounce names.
As I was typing them in last night, I was like, this is...
You realize the error of your ways?
Yeah.
Like, what have I let myself in for?
Yep.
That's
a
shame.
It's going to be ugly and let's just embrace it.
Will it be good enough in the trenches to be a serious contender? I mean... They're always a serious contender, right? With Russell Wilson at quarterback.
That's my answer, generally. Yes.
Pretty much. Like, the problem last year was not that the lines became significantly worse. It was that for the second half of the year, Russell Wilson fell off a cliff in terms of his play level. Now, that coincided with facing the Rams a couple of times, which didn't help. But if Russell Wilson plays like first half Russell Wilson for the whole year, they're serious contenders. If he plays like the year before, he played at that level the whole season. They're serious contenders.
But if you're talking Super Bowl contenders, they have to be better up front. Here's what happened last year. Jaron Reed rushed the passer 605 times.
Yeah.
And only had 41 pressures. That's a 58.7 pass rush. Puna Ford rushed 430 times, only had 28 pressures. Benson Maioa, 389 rushes, 36 pressures. Jamal Adams, as we mentioned, was third on the team in pressures with 34. I do think they need to get better up front to be a Super Bowl contender. They have to be better there. The offensive line was actually better last year. For all this Russell Wilson talk, they were better. Brandon Shell had a career year at right tackle. Dwayne Brown solid at left tackle. Damian Lewis came in and was a fantastic run blocker. Got to improve from a pass blocking standpoint. One of the better offensive lines they've had in a few years.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it helps if you get better in the Lions. I just don't know that they need to. When you look at it last year, Russell Wilson stopped playing well week 9 onwards. At that point, the Seahawks were 7-1. So if Russell Wilson plays at that level, I don't care how bad the Lions are. Now, obviously it helps. If the Lions are better, his job's easier. But if Wilson plays like MVP caliber Wilson, I don't care that the Lions are bad. They've always been bad. Yeah, not both of them, but at least one of them has always been pretty bad during his tenure there.
Bottom line,
he is playing like a superstar, they don't need to be better.
Bottom line, Seahawks are a serious contender in the NFC as long as Russell Wilson
plays well.
Is under center, playing well. The Cardinals at Young Prodigy. There's three Y's at the end. I think that's how you pronounce it. Can Kyler Murray play good enough or well enough to reset the QB market?
You can't criticize his grammar. Can't, no.
Well, he misspelled prodigy. He added three Y's.
I don't think he misspelled it. He just enhanced it.
Oh, poetic license.
Yeah.
Even. Can Kyler Murray play good enough to reset the QB market in the next few years? This is an interesting one. I was thinking of Murray from a contract standpoint recently. Reset the market?
I mean, it's similar to the Drew Lock conversation. Can he? Yes. Will he? I am less sure. I mean, really the question is, will Kyler Murray play at a high enough level that when his contract comes up, it is a massive reset of the marketplace?
What if? How about this one? Can he be as productive as, say, Lamar Jackson in his MVP season?
Again, yes. Will, probably not.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm more interested that, like, can he get to a Baker Mayfield level of play where for two or three seasons we're talking about him? Maybe he never has that MVP caliber Lamar season or even a Josh Allen season from last year, but he maintains like 85 grades for a couple of years so that when his contract comes up, he's in that category just by default, just by you're the next guy up. This is what the market is, and your negotiation is probably good enough to get you the Josh Allen type of contract, whatever the equivalent of that is in a year or two's time when the money has gone through the roof with the TV deals. Yeah, I mean, I don't think they'll write him off after this year.
I think, yeah, getting to that Baker, it's changing.
That was weak.
I think getting to the Baker, Dak contract level is doable. Last year, Kyler Murray had an 82.8 grade, 77 as a passer, 86 as a runner. I think it's that mix that makes him potentially special. Got to see him get better from a passing standpoint. I've mentioned the intermediate passes, you know, passing over the middle, just more consistency from that standpoint in general. But when they tap into his rushing ability, he's dangerous. He might not get to that exact Lamar level, but I think there's similarities there that you would put him from a contract standpoint potentially in that wherever Baker and Dak.
I also think it's really interesting what approach everybody takes with each one of these new quarterback contracts now. What do you covet? Do you covet duration of the deal? Do you covet protection so that you can get out if it goes south? Do you covet guaranteed money in a short period of time hitting the market again? Like, each one of these deals now is incredibly fascinating for which each side values.
What do the teams covet? Do they want to get
both sides? Yeah, what both sides value.
So I don't think Murray's resetting the market in a few years, but I think he's in that second tier of quarterback contracts. We have two more teams. Look at us flying through this thing. 30 teams down, two more to go. San Francisco 49ers from JM Godoy 8. JM Godoy.
Okay.
On Twitter. Which would be the best scenario for the 49ers? Play Jimmy G all year while he's healthy, or go for Trey Lance after the bye, no matter how is Jimmy G?
You should have maybe vetted some of these for like...
No, it's way better when I do it like that.
Okay.
I had the opinion to play Jimmy G all year, but I could see the positive that could bring Lance on the playoff games.
Okay.
How's that? Jimmy G or Trey Lance question?
Well, here's the thing. The only way Jimmy G lasts all season is if A, he's healthy, and B, he's playing well enough to keep Trey Lance on the bench. They have so much invested in Trey Lance that the only way he's not getting on the field is if Jimmy G is having an Alex Smith type season, like career year, they're winning, they're going to the playoffs, and you just never reach a point where you have to put in Trey Lance. So from that point of view, the best scenario for them, I think, is Jimmy G's playing all season because it means things have gone well. Does that make sense?
If Jimmy G has an Alex Smith-like season, you're saying that's your best case scenario?
The best case scenario is that he's playing all year, because the only way that happens is if he's playing so well that you never make the change.
I mean, I think your best case scenario is Trey Lance is a baller and he's awesome. That your best case scenario is that happens.
But then at some point you need to have made that switch, which means things have gone south.
Yeah, but so your best case scenario is Trey Lance is so good that you just start him week one and he's awesome and he's your future. Okay, that's your very best case scenario.
That probably isn't happening based off what we've seen so far.
Then your second best case scenario is Jimmy G plays one game and then in week two, Trey Lance takes over and he's balls out and he's awesome.
One game, pulls a hamstring.
Yes.
Trey Lance comes in, balls out.
That's your best case scenario. What you said is a second best case scenario, which is Jimmy G's awesome and Trey Lance is also awesome, but you kind of wait.
Everybody's awesome. That's your best case scenario.
Your best case scenario is everybody's good.
Okay.
My question for you is, if Jimmy G plays at 2019 level, he was our number 13 or 14 ranked quarterback, is that enough to hold off Trey Lance? It was enough to get to the Super Bowl that year and be one throw away from winning it.
It was.
Now, Jimmy G missed the throw,
yes,
but it was one throw away.
That would be tough. I honestly think the 49ers are in a kind of awkward spot because of that, because they expect to be really good. And if Jimmy G is just viable, it's a really difficult thing to put in Trey Lance.
Yeah, agreed.
Tough spot.
Let's wrap it up. Los Angeles Rams from Vinny Calabrese. Rams question. Assuming the defense regresses to a top 8 to 12 unit, Vinny's obviously a listener. He knows about defensive regression. Then what's the grade slash level slash tier does Stafford have to play at for the Rams to overcome that and actually win the NFC West this year? So the defense regresses. What does Stafford and the offense have to do?
Stafford at that point needs to be, he needs to be the inflection point. He needs to become Matt Ryan this year. Be the very best quarterback in tier two or the very worst quarterback in tier one. That's what he needs to do.
I think the inflection point. Let's make this a thing. Stafford came into the league 1 year after Matt Ryan. I might put the poll out there on Twitter. Who do you think's better, Matt Ryan or Matt? Who's had a better career?
That
Matt
would be
Ryan
yeah.
or Matthew Stafford? I think it's a slam dunk answer. I think it's a very clear answer. And you know me, and the I think situations matter. I think domes matter and all that stuff. They've both played in domes. They've both had at least one Hall of Fame receiver in Calvin and Julio for a big chunk of their career. I think it's a slam dunk who's been a better quarterback. I have a feeling the poll's going to be closer to 50-50, though. But if Matthew Stafford plays at Matt Ryan's level, the inflection point level, I think you're right. They could be the team. Now, Matt Ryan has had several seasons above 85.
Yes.
From a grading standpoint. So this is giving away my answer.
That's why he's the inflection point.
Several seasons above 85, Matthew Stafford has had zero. So you have to have at least one of those. Matt Ryan has one, two, three seasons above 85, two above 84, two above 83. That's seven seasons better than Matthew Stafford's best. So Matthew Stafford has to become Matt Ryan, production-wise, from the last 6 or 7 years, the majority of his grades.
He has to become the inflection point.
I like it. Good answer. Did you like that show? That was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was all right.
It's better than you thought.
I mean, my favorite part was you reading names and or the buzzer. The
buzzer. Thank you, Alyssa. That was well done.
The high end of the buzzer was good. The bits where the buzzer lost interest, that was weaker.
I kind of liked it because it was less piercing when it was, I don't know.
You got to hope that came through over the audio, by the way. Otherwise, it's going to be a weird show for people.
I think it did. I think it's because the people on YouTube were commenting on Alyssa and everything. They heard her comment about the Saved by the Bell and everything.
Okay.
I saw.
Then we're good.
So that was a good show, man. That was fun. We answered one question per team. I think we could do other stuff like this in the future. Just trying to get that interaction. If you guys have any other questions or things that you want to tell us, NFLpodcast@pff.com. I also want to give away a subscription because I said we would.
Okay.
This is for people that have subscribed to both this podcast and the PFF NFL Daily, sent us a screenshot confirming it. Zach Pardee is our winner. Zach Pardee is going to win a free PFF Edge subscription. I also owe somebody else an Edge from before that I need to sort out. I got to check my email. Email me again if I owe you an Edge. Don't lie to me. I'll check it out. So, Jack Pardee? Spelled a little differently. Remember Jack Pardee? The old coach? Oilers?
No.
Good job with your NFL history.
Thanks.
Zach's going to win a free subscription because he subscribed to both the Daily and the PFF NFL podcast. We're trying to grow both. We're going to be adding a new show, too. A third episode to this show is the right way to say it. A third episode, middle of the week. So, hit us up with any other ideas on that. I think we're going to bring some of our PFF friends on that every single week. Hit on some of the top storylines around the NFL because you guys just want more content. And we appreciate everybody.
That's starting next week, right?
We'll start it next 23rd. Week. Yeah. Yep. Get to PFF.com for all your fantasy needs, for all your betting needs, for all your grades and analysis and everything, college football, the whole thing. PFF.com. Become an Edge or Elite subscriber. You will not be sorry. 365 days of access. Go check it out. I mean, even if you're just going to wait and go get the draft guide, just sign up now because you get the draft guide. It'll just show up.
Sure.
In draft season. And we have a preseason draft guide, too. We've got everything. Right. So
check
it
up there.
PFF.com. Appreciate everybody. See you guys on Monday.